Welcome to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean, the natural vet, who's an integrative, holistic vet who can help you make good decisions for your pet's wellness. We love cats and dogs and the people who care for them. We're here every week to take your calls about your pets, and we'll answer on the air any question you send us to radiopetlady@gmail.com. Also, send your mailing address for a sample of Whole Life Pets freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs. Please check out all the wonderful pet shows I co-host every week on our network. Tomorrow is Dog Travel Experts, with all the ways to get out of the house with your dog from around the block to around the world. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is a production of Eight Paws LLC and Dr. Sean Messonnier, DVMPC, which are solely responsible for its content. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, companies we've invited to be here. Our number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. Such cool news for you guys tonight. It's not cool that Dr. Sean isn't here. He's a busy fellow. He's off doing one of his busy things. I have a wonderful guest co-host tonight, someone that I want to introduce you to, because very soon, May 20th, on Monday nights, she's going to have her very own show with me. Dr. Sue Ettinger is a veterinary oncologist, an integrative oncologist. She integrates chemotherapy and traditional cancer medications and treatments along with more holistic ideas. And we're going to have our very own show together called The Pet Cancer Vet. We're very excited about it. We know how many people are suffering with their along with their pets who have cancer. And now we're going to have someone who's going to help you through it. Dr. Sue, it is just so cool that you could get away from your busy, happy family and your wonderful practice to spend time with us tonight on Cat Chat and Dog Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a wonderful honor to be here.
I'm overflowing
with excitement.
As so am I. And those of you out there listening, you're thinking, cancer, hang on. Let me, change my baseball cap and put it on backwards. It may not have been what you were expecting, but it's not gloomy, depressing cancer. There's hope cancer. So anyone listening, any of the special friends listening, maybe you were planning on calling in about something else, you can always call in with any sort of question. Because Dr. Sue, besides being an oncologist, guess what you have to be before you get your specialty? You're a veterinarian. So she can answer any kind of medical question along with me. 888-627-6008. But the first thing we'd like to do, because Dr. Sean and I talk about cancer a lot, Sue, because it's all over the place. I mean, 50 to 75% of dogs over, what would you say, 3 or 4 years old are getting cancer. And yeah, so you're a busy woman.
They estimate that 1 in 3 dogs of any age will get cancer, and 50% of dogs over the age of 10 will be affected by some tumor over the course of their life. It's an epidemic. It really, really is, unfortunately.
And dogs are living longer, so, they're around longer, so maybe more time to develop the cancer for it to be expressed. And we have better diagnostic tools. And do you think that this is a kind of philosophical discussion, which we'll discuss on the Pet Cancer Vet as well, that dogs used to have cancer and we simply didn't know because we were ignorant of it, or we didn't have diagnostic tools. Are needle biopsies kind of more modern? I have no idea. I'm talking about before your time even. Call it 30 or 40 years ago.
I think it's a great question. It's a question I get all the time. Are we seeing more cancer, or are we just identifying more cancer? And the problem is, I don't think we have a clear-cut answer. Cancer is not well documented in dogs and cats the way it is in people. In people, we have a census, so we know how many people there are, and cancer is a reportable disease. And we are unfortunately not that sophisticated that we can document decade by decade, but year by year, the changes in cancer. So I don't really think we know the answer. I think a lot of it is what you just mentioned. Pets are living longer. They have better health care. We are treating other medical diseases more successfully, heart disease, kidney disease, right, hormone diseases. And unfortunately, I think we're diagnosing more cancer. But I don't know that answer. I mean, a lot of people feel like cancer is more prevalent, but I don't know that we have the science behind that to document that yet. I wish we did.
Yeah, because although what good will it do us? If any of you are at the dog park and you got an 8 or 9 year old, Dr. Sue is saying 10 years old, but if you have a large breed dog, that would probably go down to 6 or 7 years old.
Absolutely.
If you're in that dog park, look to your left and look to your right. One of you is going to be having cancer, or it's going to be found, and you're going to have to deal with it. So it's part of life. It's not something we can put our heads in the sand to be an ostrich about, but we don't have to tear our hair out and, you know, just lose our minds and give up all hope. I think that that's a very important part of why you became an oncologist. It was to give people hope, not to just deliver a death sentence, right? I mean, otherwise you'd be so depressed all the time.
And the crazy thing, and people, I love my job. I don't love that there's so much cancer in pets and in dogs and cats, but I love my job because dogs tolerate and cats tolerate treatment so much better than people. And they don't have the psychological, emotional impact of knowing they have cancer. They know when they don't feel well from their cancer, but they tolerate treatment so well, and they, it really is about hope. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you have to tell people to remember. Your pet doesn't know it has cancer, and they don't think, when I go to the vet, am I going to get sick? Am I going to live up to the statistics?
Right.
And they don't, and they live in the moment. And the pet parents worry about that, and they look at me and say, is my dog going to live longer than the median? Is my cat going to get sick from chemo? But I think a little ignorance is bliss for the pets, and that they don't have to worry about those details.
Do you find that any of the owners of pets with cancer are able to kind of, if you will, take a page from the pet's book and kind of pick up on that kind of, look, just enjoy every moment, which doesn't mean give them a slice of chocolate cake 3 times a day. You know, oh, all the things they've been forbidden all their life, let's give it to them now. But to just enjoy what you have in front of you, and that people are able to do that rather than every time they look at the pet just feeling weepy and moaning and feeling so sorry for themselves and the pet? Or, of course, there's no generalization. Everyone's an individual. But do you think that once they're in cancer treatment, they do begin to – the human begins to say, you know, this isn't so bad, and life is sort of like it was before?
Well, two things. Once they actually start treatment, and I always tell people chemotherapy is not a contract. We take it treatment by treatment. You don't like how your pet's responding, you change it. You don't come back. That's okay. Most people come back and they're so surprised how well the pet is doing. So I think that is a huge relief for them, that they really are tolerating the treatment well. And I always tell people, let me worry about the dose reductions. Do we need antibiotics? Do we need to start nausea meds? Let me obsess over the details. And I think about my patients, why I'm taking my dog for a walk, why I'm in the shower, you know, and I say, I'm the oncologist, so I get to worry about the details. It's not going to change the outcome. So just enjoy each moment with the pet and let me worry about the details. You know, give the medications that I recommend, come in on time for appointments, but let me worry about the details. And other than that, life is short and precious. I think we've all seen that, you know, with all the events that have happened, you know, the news this year, between Hurricane Sandy and Newtown shootings, life is precious. Just enjoy each moment. And I always say, let me worry about the pet's disease.
And there are no guarantees anyway. So, you know, cancer is a guarantee that your pet's life will be shorter than it would have been otherwise. But, you know, who knows, all kinds of awful things can happen, and you can't fuss about them and obsess about them. At least you know what it is when you find out what it is. And for most kinds of cancer, there is a treatment. Dr. Sue co-authored a book that I think is just aces, called The Dog Cancer Survival Guide. It's a wonderful book co-written with a veterinarian on Hawaii, of all places, Damian Dressler. And it's an incredible resource. If anybody's dog has cancer, you have to own the book. It's as simple as that. It explains all the words that come rushing at you. It describes the kinds of cancers. It talks about different treatment options. It has individual stories and pictures of animals. It's so helpful. I guess that what happens with cancer, Dr. Sue, is that people may feel so alone and like, oh, woe is me, why me, oh, poor pitiful me, or pitiful animal. And your book makes people realize, gosh, every other person sitting next to you on a bus or in the supermarket is going to be going through this. You're not alone. And there's great doctors and great medicine to help.
Thank you. I mean, it's true. And I do agree we need a book for cats. Hopefully it will be one of our projects in the upcoming future. And the other thing that I think most people forget is they hear cancer, and they forget that cancer is a big umbrella term for many different diseases, many different cancers, that you know, can each act differently and have different survival times and prognoses, and that, you know, lymphoma is not mast cell tumor, is not mammary tumors. And some of these tumors are very treatable. And as I say, many dogs can live very well, and cats, and live longer. And that's really the essence of what I do, is we don't want them to be alive longer if they're not enjoying the majority of their days. And so I think people need to get the facts and learn about their pet's cancer, learn about the treatments, and then we can go through the, you know, some people come and see me and they decide not to treat, and that's okay, as long as they've made an educated decision. I do not judge whether a patient treat or an owner treats right. or does not treat, as long as they've made an educated decision. I'm so sad and frustrated when someone comes to see me and we both look and say, yeah, it, you know, I could have done more 3 months ago. And so, again, they don't have to treat if they come see me or another oncologist, but just get the information and make an educated decision.
And find out what your options are. What are the sort of situations that you can remember that people have chosen not to? Is it with a very old dog? Is it financial? Is it because they're terrified of the word chemotherapy and only you cannot convince them that dogs really do incredibly well with it and there's great medications for nausea and stuff that it's not they sit around with their hair doesn't fall out, and they don't sit around retching the way people imagine chemotherapy for humans, which rarely does that even happen in humans anymore because of all this great other medication. What would you say is the main reason that people choose not to?
Yes. It's a combination of all of the things that you said. And it really depends. I mean, sometimes it is what else is going on in the person's life, a sick family
right.
member that they're right. getting to their own therapy. Sometimes it's financial. It's also interesting how, you know, I usually talk to the family veterinarian before the case comes in, or I call them right after, you know, the pet leaves our facility. And, you know, they say the owner's coming, but they're not going to treat. And then they come in and they listen to the options and they treat. And I think a lot changes from the time they hear the diagnosis from their vet. That and then that they need to go see an oncologist, and the time they see me, which could only be days, you know, in many cases,
yes,
but they
yes.
they go through the different phases, they start to accept, and then they say, all right, I'll try a dose or two. Let's see how the pet does. So it is also interesting how many people think and tell their primary veterinarian, I'm not going to treat. I would never treat a pet with cancer. And then those are some of my happiest clients, you know, it's, but.
I used to believe that myself. I used to believe not knowing enough about veterinary oncology, that it was cruel to put an animal through it. That was an idea that I used to have, and there may be mm-hmm. other people who have that because they themselves don't understand how far oncology's come for animals. It's the same drugs that you use for humans. And you wouldn't think of not treating a human with cancer, no matter what the age of the human, no matter what kind of cancer. I mean, it's very, very rare for someone to say, just let me die slowly or quickly or on my own terms and don't give me a shot at seeing if I can knock this thing back. Most people, it seems to me, even if they've said, I don't know what I'd ever do, when the time comes, they say, I really want more time. I don't care how long it is. Let me have a shot at this. And it's probably the same way with the pets, is that once you describe to them, they do not suffer. There's no
right.
suffering involved. I mean, because it's all managed so well. And as you say, they have no psychological burden. And that's the hard part for people is, oh, my God, ticking time bomb inside me. I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared. And the dog is just like another trip to the vet and a biscuit afterwards. I mean, they don't know the difference between that and going to have, you know, their yearly blood test done.
Yeah, well, unlike people, most dogs do not get sick the day of treatment. It's very rare. Most people say, do I need to stay home that day? Nope, you know, just go on with your normal life. Most dogs, especially the day of treatment, the dog comes out, they're wagging their tail. They just can't believe that we gave chemo that day. And it's an interesting transformation. And it goes back to one of the reasons why I love my job. The pets are so happy. The owners are so happy. And it's all about good quality time and as much time as so they can do all the things that they enjoy, whether it's going on walks, sitting on the couch watching TV, going to the beach, you know, going around
yes.
the block. Whatever it is, we want more time with our pets.
And sometimes that time, that more concentrated time, once you get the diagnosis to when the animal you lose them, that time can be sweeter, more concentrated, more intense, as long as you don't make it maudlin.
Right.
I mean, I think that's an important thing to realize. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'd love it if any of you has a cancer question or actually any question to ask Dr. Sue. 888-627-6008. I'm here tonight not with Dr. Sean, to those of you tuning in late, but with Dr. Sue Ettinger, who is my new partner on a new show that's going to be on the Radio Pet Lady Network on Monday nights at 9 p.m. East, 6 p.m. West, called The Pet Cancer Vet. And that's what she is, and we're going to talk a little bit when we come back about where her practice is, her specialty center, and people that might, after hearing her, might think, you know, I decided not to treat. Either I didn't know anything or I didn't like the oncologist I met. She sounds great. How do I find her? So just hang on while we have a quick break for our sponsors. And our number is 888-627-6008. We'll be right back. Waruva is a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility. So it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is also supported by the pheromone products Feel-Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feel-Away diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feel-Away and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who have just left their litters. Look for Feel-Away and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals Omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. We are back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner here with Dr. Sue Ettinger, the pet cancer vet, whose very own show will start May 20th. That's in a couple of Mondays, and be a chance for you to learn a whole lot more about cancer in dogs and cats. And send us any questions you have, any kind of diagnosis you've gotten and treatment you might be going through, treatment you want to consider, and Dr. Sue and I will be answering those on the Pet Cancer Vet. You write to RadioPetLady@gmail.com. You can also go to Dr. Sue Cancer Vet. Is that the name of your website, Sue?
Yep.
All right. .com. But you can .com, of course. There's always a .com, and there's lots of W's in front of it. But if you go to RadioPetLady.com, you'll see the page is already up for Dr. Sue. You read a little bit about her. See the book, The Dog Cancer Survival Guide, which really is an amazing, amazing piece of work. Sue, mast cell cancer. You know, people don't think about it that much. I happen to have found it in one of my dogs. It was mm-hmm. a tiny little bump, smaller than a pea. I had before that, like 6 months before, lost my Roddy to long bone cancer on a front leg, and I couldn't do an amputation because he had no hip sockets in the back. He was born that way, just like no hind end stability. So we had to put him to sleep at six, which was pretty devastating. He had the personality and energy of, I don't know, a year-old puppy. He was Yogi Bear was one of the great Rottweilers. He was like that dog Carl, you know, the children's book Carl that has no words to it, just has that beautiful Rottweiler that just looks after the kids. Anyway, I was pretty freaked out about cancer. There was nothing I could do for him. I mean, maybe there was, actually, to be honest with you. I was given the impression there wasn't. Now that I think about it, if I'd known you, I would have come to you and you might have said, I don't know, he was totally lame on that leg, so probably not. He couldn't really go for a walk. So I see this little pea-sized bump on one of my Weimaraners. I go into the vet and I say, can you needle biopsy this? It looks like absolutely nothing. It looks almost like a mosquito bite. But you know what? I'm just paranoid. She said, it's nothing, I'm sure, but absolutely to put your mind at rest. And it wasn't just mast cell cancer, but it was stage two. Now, we all have heard of stage two and three and like terminal and stage four cancers, at least in people. And oh my God, stage two sounded so terrible. So just the normal vet, not an oncologist, which may or may not have been a mistake, although it wasn't. He lived many more years, did a very big wide margin excision mm-hmm. of that area, which had only been the size of a pea. And that was the end of that. Now, there's a cancer that's like no, just like a big whoop, as they say. Is that what mast cell cancer can be like if you catch it fairly early?
It is. It's the tumor that I say one size does not fit all, meaning you can have a dog just like your dog with a, and that was probably a grade 2. And so that's based on right. how aggressive the cells looked under the microscope.
Okay.
Stage usually, I know it kind of gets confusing. Stage
no, but
is
it's
usually,
good to know.
Stage is how far advanced it is internally, whether it's spread to internal organs. So there's three grading systems where grade 3 is the most aggressive. And then grade 1 is the least aggressive, and then grade 2 in the middle. Grade 3, 50 to 90% will metastasize or spread internally. Grade 1, the low grade, very low. And then grade 2, almost a 50-50 split, depending on which research paper you look at. So, you know, what fits for one dog with, you know, a grade 1 mast cell tumor can be very different for a dog with a grade 3 mast cell tumor. I have plenty of dogs with grade 1 and grade 2 mast cell tumors. They go on. They have other things that, you know, come up in other years, and they live for years and never have another mast cell tumor. We also know that about 15 to 20% of dogs will get another mast cell tumor over the course of their life. Could be 3 months from now, could be 3 or 4 years from now. So you want to do exactly what you do. Any lump and bump that your dog has that, you know, that is there for any, I would say, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, you know, definitely for a month, if it's there, you want to go to a vet and have them either poke a needle in it and do an aspirate or take a biopsy where they take a little piece of tissue and send it to the lab. Our eyes are not microscopes, and we want to intervene and do something about these masses early. It doesn't mean that every, you know, lump and bump needs to come off your dog, but we want to know what it is when it's, you know, 1 centimeter, half an inch. We don't want to wait until something is, you know, 6 inches or, you know, 10 centimeters. And then you, you know, a lot of the easy options are out the door because the tumor is too big. So I'm a big advocate of getting to your primary vet with, you know, lumps and bumps when they're small and getting them aspirated or biopsy. And make a decision based on that aspirate, if it's benign or malignant, what to do. But don't just look at it and say, we'll just keep an eye on it. I think that's a big thing.
That is the phrase that drives Dr. Sean, the natural vet, out the window. Mm-hmm. It makes him so angry. Oh, you just want to sit around and watch cancer grow? Gee, that doesn't seem like how I'd like to spend my time. Right. You know, to him, it's malpractice. So that if a doctor claims to have x-ray vision, which is in a sense what they're doing, that can't be anything, just a fatty tumor. You have to have stuck a needle in it. Now, I have, and as some dogs get older, they get lumpier. You see some Goldens in labs just covered in like kind of gross, huge lumps, which may all be benign and nothing but just a bunch of fat deposits. But I've had this series of rescued Weimaraners who, as the vet says, are sort of wearing a spandex suit, so everything shows. You know, there's not mm-hmm. no fur to speak of.
Right.
I suppose that would be true with pit bulls and lots of dogs that don't really have fur to speak of. And there's lumps kind of as they're getting older, a little lump here, and there's one on the arm, and there's one on the chest, and there's one on the groin. And my vet keeps a chart. So mm-hmm. she has like a, you know, like a hand-drawn chart of the ones that she's already poked. Now, if you've ever had a lump poked and the lump keeps growing, but it was poked and was nothing, just fat cells a year ago or 2 years ago, should that be re-biopsied with a needle or not?
If it's not changing in size and the vet, you know, had a good
aspirate. No, I'm saying it is changing in size. It's getting bigger.
I would probably re-aspirate. If it's not behaving like you think it should, some of these benign lipomas, those are the benign fatty ones, can get bigger. But if they're rapidly getting bigger, they're changing in size or appearance, and it doesn't look or smell like a lipoma, you know what I'm saying, not the
yes,
real smell.
Right.
You know, then maybe aspirate. And sometimes the aspirate is not going to be diagnostic, and then you have to do a biopsy where we actually take a core of tissue. And often they can be done under local, so it doesn't require, you know, general anesthesia or just with a short sedation. But if a mass is getting bigger, you know, and you don't like the vet doesn't like the way that it looks, I think that it's worthwhile to re-aspirate. But again, some lipomas get bigger over time, but, you know, as part of their annual exam, everything should be re-evaluated. Go back to that, you know, we call them skin maps, those skin charts, and compare them and change them. Because I have had cases, I don't want to scare people, but I have had cases that were the first time they were aspirated, it was a lipoma, and then it comes back as something else. So maybe the needle went to the wrong area and it went through the fatty part of it. So again, if something's, you know, growing in size, it's probably worth, you know, reevaluating again.
That's what I'm wondering, because, you know, when you say smell, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I just have this, I don't know, call it sixth sense, just this fishy feeling. It's like, I don't know. They say, well, if they're kind of, you know, there's sort of a folk wisdom. Well, if they're really pretty round and they're squishy and you can kind of feel like if you felt them through the skin, they weren't attached to something underneath. They were kind of loose under the skin, if you will, that's if you've already had it aspirated, then that probably still is a fatty lipoma. But is that a false sense of information if it's getting bigger?
If it's getting bigger, you should probably re-aspirate, because we don't know for sure. That feeling, you know, there are some tumors that are soft. Yes, if it's getting firmer, the skin's getting bruised over it, you know, those are, you know, some important signs. But again, if it, you just can't tell by squeezing it, feeling it. You just don't know. You need to get some sort of sample. And I always tell people, if the aspirate is not diagnostic, I mean, we send it to the lab and they say, we see some blood, some inflammation, but they can't draw a conclusion. That's not okay. I mean, it's okay that the aspirate was non-diagnostic, because it happens even to me, but you have to, don't just go home and say it was non-diagnostic. Say, okay, I'm going to schedule that biopsy with my vet, because non-diagnostic is not an answer. It doesn't eliminate cancer. You need to get a biopsy that tells you, and it may be benign inflammation, but you want to confirm that with the biopsy if your aspirate doesn't, you know, give you a good clear-cut answer.
Because if it were to be cancer and you were to get it before it spread to internal organs, then your dog may wind up having a long, healthy, or decent, happy life. The question is, if it were, if I had known you then, when Billy Blue had this grade 2, not stage 2, but grade 2 mast cell tumor, would you have recommended, and I actually, if I had known more then, I mean, I'm learning things all the time, it probably would have been an excellent idea to have a consultation with you. If the word cancer is on your dog's chart, why wouldn't you, if you're lucky enough to be able to get to some place that has an oncologist, which if you folks aren't living in an area like where Dr. Sue practices, the Animal Specialty Center, which is in a part of Westchester, Yonkers, New York, you can go to a veterinary college at a university. They all have oncologists or a department that's, you know, maybe a little more hip than just your regular general practitioner vet. Would you have said, good, you got it out with a knife, now let's give a little chemo? Or is that not done?
Not all grade 2 mast cell tumors do need chemotherapy. We have some more advanced testing that we can do on the original biopsy. It's called mast cell tumor prognostic panel, and it's a set of markers that help us predict which of those grade 2s are going to behave better and which are going to likely, and no test is a crystal ball, but so it does give us more information. The grade 2 mast cell tumors have frustrated oncologists for years because, like I said, about 50% of them behave really well and don't spread, and then some of them think they're high-grade tumors, and they do spread. And so we've done more research, and we have better testing once we know some things are grade 2. And now we have, as you were saying, chemotherapy with less side effects. We have targeted chemotherapy. So there, you know, there's a lot of research and a lot of good options. And that's why, again, one size does not fit all. If your neighbor's dog had a mast cell tumor,
it doesn't
mean that, you know, lymphoma in dogs is pretty straightforward in terms of treatment and things like that. But mast cell tumor, absolutely not one size fits all. I have a blog, you know, there's a chapter in the book, and then I kind of updated it more recently. And I have it ended up being a 7 or 8 part series because I had so much to say, and that's all free. It's dogcancerblog.com. There's more information in the book as well. But again, it's a complicated tumor, and I actually tell vets, you know, for clients before they're going to come see me, read this. And then when they come in, the appointment's almost like a review and they're hearing it a second time and it's starting to click and make more sense. And if they haven't found it before, I give them a little voluntary homework. They can read it when they get home. But the other thing I tell people is I can tell you you can come in and hear the same thing about mast cell tumors, and I can say the same thing verbatim, which I'm sure I never do exactly, but the same gist, and you will hear different parts of it because your head is swirling, your pet has cancer, you're worried about so many different things. So repetition is the key. You want to read it online from a reputable source. You want to read it in our book. You want to call into a radio show. You want to meet an oncologist, and you want to bring your pet and your pet's medical records. There's only so much we can do, you know, over the phone and over the internet. It's really important you get your pet into the specialist who can touch your pet, look at your pet, look at the biopsy reports, and make very customized, individualized treatment recommendations for your pet.
Because each one is an individual, and what happened with your neighbor's dog or cat is not what happened with yours. We're going to go to another break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about cats, and I think oral tumors, oral cancer is one of the most common things in cats and something that people could probably catch a lot sooner if they ever had a look inside their pussycat's mouth or, you know, had the vet do it or got them used to it from the time they adopted them or from the time they were kittens. So when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about the most common cancer in cats because people always think dog, 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 lymphoma, hemangiosarcoma, mast cell, but these kitties get a fair amount of cancer too. And it's really treatable. So another kind of hopeful story about cancer when we get back. And the number if you want to call us is 888-627-6008. We'll be right back. Vaxacheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? Vaxacheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. Vaxacheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use Vaxacheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. Vaxacheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And Vaxacheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Catatrack litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief Litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We are back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. Dr. Sean has the night off, and I'm here with Dr. Sue Ettinger, the pet cancer vet. We'll have our very own show in just a couple of weeks, Monday nights, 9 p.m. East, 6 p.m. West, called The Pet Cancer Vet on Radio Pet Lady Network. Sue, let's talk about kitties and their mouths and the cancer that lurks therein. Is this something, we've talked briefly about cancer in general in pets, and it's an epidemic, and there's so much of it, and my God, every other dog past a certain age is going to have it. Have cats always been prey also to cancer, or does that seem to be more kind of like this epidemic sense as well?
I think it's similar to dogs. There's always that saying that cats are not small dogs. But again, I think we're doing, you know, we do a great job. Cats can live, you know, 15, 20 plus years. We do a great job with hyperthyroidism and kidney disease and their, you know, their other diseases, heart disease. And so we're managing the medical diseases better. And I think we are seeing more cancer. On the positive note, we don't see as much feline leukemia positive lymphomas, which was usually a lymphoma that we saw in young kitties. The classic kitty was a young 1-year-old outdoor male kitty that was prone to fighting and getting transmissible, FELV. So, you know, the veterinarians and shelters have done a great job testing for that and getting feline leukemia out of, you know, the majority of cats, but you know, they're living longer and we're seeing other diseases. Now, lymphoma, which we commonly see in the gastrointestinal tract and lymph nodes inside the belly in cats, is a middle-aged and older disease. It's not those young kitties anymore. The young kitties used to have it in their bone marrow and actually in a lymph node inside the chest. So it's changed, you know, how we see it. That was, you know, sort of, it's really been a transition over the last couple of years. But again, not great epidemiology or statistics to tell us what how cancer incidence has changed over the years. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we don't have a census like we do in people, and we don't report cancer in dogs and cats the way we do in people. And people, you can get online and look at, you know, breast cancer and colon cancer, and, you know, almost year to year, look at how it's changing, you know, the top five cancers and how many people are getting it, where they're getting it. You can identify hot zones by location.
Right, right.
You know, it kind of makes me really jealous that they have that information.
Yeah. Because who knows, dogs and cats living in cities might be much more riddled with cancer than the country ones, or vice versa. And
exactly.
That would tell us something. It's a total mystery what the triggers are for this cancer. I mean, people like to say it's food, but it's pretty vague. You know, we also use massive amounts of chemicals in our homes and on our lawns, and who knows? There's so many elements that go into it that are unknowable. If they were knowable, then there'd be a full-on cure for it if you knew what it was that triggered the immune system to sort of go wackadoo. So cats in their mouth, though, get cancer that's really nasty. And if people could get in the habit of looking in their cat's mouth, like, I don't know, would you say once a week, it's very obvious, right? Oral cancer is like really nasty.
The problem is exactly what you're saying, is we find it way too late. This is one of those cancers where, you know, most people are not opening, even for dogs, we're not opening up our pet's mouth. And so, you know, we often find in cats these tumors that are 2-3 centimeters, they're under the tongue, they're huge by the time.
Yes.
If you catch them early, surgery would be so much more successful for them, but we're not finding them early enough. And we have studies that show if you don't catch them early, aggressive therapy is not recommended because the cats don't live longer and you're putting them through a lot. And that oral squamous cell carcinomas is one of the cancers that I don't recommend aggressive therapy, because surgery, radiation, and chemo for these advanced ones has not been shown to be beneficial. So I focus on nutritional support. I focus on pain control. You know, those are the heart of what we have to do in those cases. But you're right. If we could find them earlier, there are studies that show if you can, you know, do surgery on these when they're still small masses, these cats can go on and live very long lives. But the problem is I don't get to see them that early. So, opening up your cat's mouth, not just so you're getting used to opening up your cat's mouth and what it looks like, but getting your cat used to that feeling. It also makes for when you have to give medication
a lot easier.
You know, whether it's antibiotics for, you know, a urinary tract infection, much easier. One of my nurses is the cat whisperer, and she can medicate any cat. And it's a little bit embarrassing for me, and I can't believe I'm telling everyone, but I have to get my cat's medications compounded into a liquid flavor chicken. He doesn't like fish because I am not a good pillar. But you know what? We have ways to get around it. He loves his chicken medication. He sometimes comes through the refrigerator and reminds me it's time to get his medication. I've learned more about, you know, being a good owner with my own pets than being a veterinarian sometimes. And no one teaches you how to really pill your own animal in vet school. It's not until you have to, you know, pill your own animal that you learn how to do it. But it's okay if you can't pill it. But again, I think if we can learn to open up our cat's mouth, you know, touch your cat's feet, touch your dog's feet, you know, do these, you know, as you're petting them, feel them up and down for different masses, open up your dog's mouth, look in the back, you know, get them used to that feeling. They won't be as bothered by it. And, you know, again, early detection to me is so important to successful outcomes for our pets.
And sometimes people talk about smelly breath on a cat. And so the presumption often is, oh, it's dental disease, it's gingivitis, there's tooth decay, which there may or may not be, but it can also be an oral cancer, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of cats, it's when they're going for dentistry, you know, the tooth kind of comes out too easily, and then the vet notices that the tissue underneath the tooth or around the tooth was not normal, and they biopsy it. So again, you know, good oral care, I think, is really important. You know, and my colleague who's a dentist for dogs and cats will be very happy that we say, you know, look in your pet's mouth and, you know, dental care is really important, you know, brushing your dog or cat's teeth, but at least, you know, getting those good oral exams. And if you can't do it, that's okay, you know, but make sure you're getting your middle-aged and older pet to the vet regularly. I always tell people, think about how often you go to the dentist
twice a year, I often say.
So think
and you brush every day. Yeah.
So think about how animals age. So asking a middle-aged and older dog or cat to go to the vet twice a year is not really that often. It seems like it in our calendar, but it really isn't. And you should, you know, the mouth should be looked at every, you know, good exam, aspirate those lumps and bumps. But I think it's really important that you get to your vet, you know, not for shots, not necessarily for medications, but, you know, the value of a good exam from, you know, nose to tail is so important.
And inside the mouth is a really good place to start. I mean, on one of my dogs, found a cracked molar, cracked through and through. I mean, and the pain he must have been in was extraordinary. And if there had been a veterinary dentist nearby, I think my vet would have been really happy to turn that over to him, because he said his hands went numb trying to get it out of there. I mean, it was so deep and so huge and so, I don't know, impacted or just a mess. And a Cocker Spaniel that I had, a Malfi, years ago, that seemed to be having, I don't know, some horrible skin thing. He was just falling apart mentally and physically. His whole skin was like suppurating, like almost like his entire body had some kind of infection on the outside, and you'd bathe it and it didn't do any good to take antibiotics. And so I took him to the vet. He was really losing it mentally a lot about food and where, when and how to pee. And she looked in his mouth, and I am, you know, confessing to say, I never looked in his mouth, and there was a big, giant tumor in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was on top of all of his other deficits, and it wasn't something that could be treated, because I guess it's exactly what you just said. When there's a – and it was in such a place that, you know, you wouldn't see it if he was just walking around, you know. I mean, you had to open his jaws and have a look in there. And, of course, if you're doing it all the time, you know what normal looks like. It's sort of like breast exams for women. You know what normal feels like. So if there's a change, you're going to feel it. But if you don't feel it all the time, then you don't know what things should be there anyway, you know, that are just kind of the basic equipment of inside the mouth. So, I mean, that's really – if someone – my neighbor had – the one of the Siamese had a tumor that was sort of in the jaw area. I guess it was sort of oral, or it seemed to – be in the jaw, and then it turned out it was enormous, and there's nothing you can do about it at that point, right?
Yeah, with a big sigh, I say, in general, you know, when they're found late, there aren't good curative intent options, surgery, radiation, and things like that. And again, we go to pain control and nutritional support. The oral squamous cell carcinomas, unlike some of the other tumors that we briefly touched on, in general, do not metastasize or spread. Catching them early, you don't need chemotherapy. If you catch them early and you can do surgery, it's not one that we typically recommend chemotherapy to prevent the cancer from spreading. So it's really, it even emphasized why early detection is so important for these, because if you catch them early and do surgery, that you can potentially, quote unquote, cure these guys.
Right.
So yeah, it
Oh, that's very different. So chemotherapy is only when it has spread or is a kind of cancer that wants to spread.
And high risk in general. That's a very – whole, chemotherapy is best for cancers before they've spread that are at high risk or high potential to spread. There are some exceptions to that, you know, that we can touch on our radio show in the future. But in general, if you have – you know, again, a low-grade mast cell tumor, surgery alone is your friend. You know, it can be curative for some of these cancers. So, again, if you can get things off when they're still small, we're very, you know, we'll be ahead of the game.
So the reason you can't do that surgery when the mast gets larger is because then you'd have to take out part of the palate or the jaw or something?
Yeah.
Is that the problem? It's like too much now a part of the structure of the mouth?
Yeah. I mean, you're not leaving a functional pet.
I see.
So and this goes for dogs as well. Surgery tends to be better for the lower jaw and more towards the nose, you know, the front of the mouth as you get further back. And then, you know, touch your face or look at your pet's face.
Right.
The upper jaw is connected to the nasal cavity. So,
right.
You know, those make surgery harder. There's more, the doctors say, more morbidity. There's more side effects associated with it. But an oral cancer of the lower jaw, more towards the front, is a better one. Doesn't mean that you can't do surgery for, you know, lower jaw towards the back. But in general, you know, the ones that are more likely to be good, as we say, surgical candidates, lower jaw towards the front. But again, you know, if your pet has an oral cancer, we're going to want to do a CAT scan, a CT scan.
Right.
To tell us how advanced it is. And then you want a board certified surgeon to look at the CT scan and tell you whether or not surgery is an option. And some of the other oral tumors, you know, and for squames, maybe we may talk about radiation as well if it's non-surgical. So just because you think your cat has a big oral tumor of the upper jaw towards the back, go and see an oncologist. Don't say, oh, I heard Dr. Sue say
right.
it's not working.
Right.
You know, you still...
Because each cat's an individual. I mean,
absolutely.
You go back to that. It may just be some place where they say, we can get that and still preserve
right.
this cat's ability to drink and to eat, which is sort of your basics.
Right.
We're going to go to another break. When we get back, I want to talk about pet insurance and how people must be thinking, yeah, so what's all this going to cost? And the incredible importance of pet insurance. I talk about it almost every show. But there is no better example than cancer, because half of you are going to get cancer and you're either going to have to mortgage your house, watch your animal waste away when they didn't need to because you couldn't afford it, or have pet insurance and let them pay 80% of every bill. We're going to be right back after this break. You're out there and want to call. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. We're back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm here with Dr. Sue, the pet cancer vet tonight. Dr. Sean is off. And I briefly mentioned pet insurance before the break. But you wanted to add something else about oral tumors because we didn't quite finish on that. So yes, anything more you want to add, the more people know, the better.
Yeah, we kept talking about squamous cell carcinomas, which most studies show about 80% of tumors are. There are other types as well, fibrosarcomas, surgery is a really good option for those. Or radiation, they respond well to radiation if they're non-surgical. So, you know, again, you don't want to get too tunnel vision that it's one tumor type, and it's still worth doing a biopsy or getting in to see a specialist and finding out the options, because some of these tumors, again, are very treatable. Early detection will be very useful as well for the kitties.
And this is something that it's called the Dog Cancer Survival Guide, but a great deal of the information, advice, support, descriptions of what things are certainly is valid for cats too, who are not little dogs, but cancer is cancer, and it's pretty much across all species. So I think that, for example, when you're putting a fine point on the kind of sarcoma, and we're listening on the radio and we're going, there's different ones. But then if you're, as you said earlier, in the middle of a diagnosis, you don't hear anything. You're like, cancer, cancer, cancer. So it's sort of like one of those New Yorker cartoons. Dr. Sue is talking And all the person sees is cancer, 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 cancer. And you're having a very cheerful conversation about some good prognosis and some great treatment options. And all the person's thinking is cancer, 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 because they're just freaked out.
Right.
So I think this is a great value of the dog cancer survival guide, which truly, until the cat cancer survival guide gets written, and Dr. Sue's kind of like a busy lady, I can't see that happening anytime soon. And also you could really transpose a huge amount from one book to another because cancer's cancer, right? I mean, it's not all that different, I shouldn't think, in cats or dogs when they have it. And I think it's just really useful for people to have just the dictionary aspect of it. You know, this kind of sarcoma, that kind of sarcoma. And radiation is something that we won't have time to talk about tonight, but something that people never think about. I mean, when you look at breast cancer back in the 60s, when they were just, you know, figuring out in humans how to handle breast cancer, there were massive doses of radiation given, huge amounts. You don't hear that much about radiation anymore. You hear about chemotherapy, at least in popular parlance, articles you read, books you read, things you hear people talking about. But radiation has a great value for brain tumors, right, in people, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, for ones you can't operate, it shrinks them. That must be true in the pets as well, that the radiation gets to places where you can't get with a knife. Is it instead of a knife, basically?
The radiation that we have at Animal Specialty Center is in place of surgery. So we have something that's called stereotactic radiosurgery, and that is using radiation in place of surgery. It's a very conforming radiation, and in fact, the number one tumor that we treat with radiosurgery, our unit's called CyberKnife, it's easier to say, is brain tumors in dogs and cats.
Wow.
The second most common tumor that we treat are nasal tumors because, again, they're not good places to do surgery. You don't get all the cancer cells, and so they need radiation afterwards. And so now we have a form of radiation that can treat certain tumors very successfully in one or three treatments on three consecutive days, and it's comparable in results to conventional radiation, which is 15 to 20 daily treatments. Yeah, it's crazy. We have the same unit that they're using in people. People, they use it very commonly for prostate tumors. We don't see as many prostate tumors, but again, we do treat some prostate tumors, bone tumors that are not, and that for dogs that are not candidates for surgery. Again, CyberKnife, and we should, you know, spend a whole episode or a whole
CyberKnife. Yes. Absolutely, you all can start listening on May 20th. And I'd say that one of the most valuable things that we're going to have, Sue, will be our podcast library, because it's a way that people, when they get that diagnosis or some family member or friend does, they're going to be able to go to the podcast library of the Pet Cancer Vet and, you know, listen to a show. We're going to try to have shows very targeted, like radiation, to certain topics. And I think it's really terrific because you have new age, cutting age stuff like this that, excuse the pun, that people don't even know about. And
exactly.
Then you might have more conventional radiation, and then there's different kinds of chemo and questions like, you know, it's such a short course compared to people. I guess you don't put a port in or leave a catheter in. I mean, you just do it and they go home and they come back a little later and do it again.
Yep.
Our time is up, but it's been really such an education for me, and I know for everybody else too, that we need to learn more about cancer in our pets. We need to learn more about it because it's going to happen to, if not us, our neighbor, our friend, our family member. And the more we know, the smarter we're going to be about getting on it early so that we can push it back, quote unquote, cure it, or just buy some quality time. And I know that that's what motivates you to keep on doing what you're doing and doing it so well. Now, you go to RadioPetLady.com, you find the Pet Cancer Vet page, and you'll see the Animal Specialty Center, which is where Dr. Sue practices. And there's that veterinary dentist there as well. It's all specialties. It's not an everyday vet. They work through your own vet. They don't take you away from your vet. They work with them for you and for your pet. So specialty centers like yours are rare and wonderful and really important for those of us that are lucky enough to find these diseases early enough that we can treat them and get on with some good times and good life with our pets, right?
Absolutely. Live longer, live well.
live longer, live well. It doesn't seem like, you know, necessarily the message you'd get from an oncologist, but there is good news about dogs and cats with cancer, and it's only really a good outcome and good news if you're willing to, you know, keep a vigilant eye and feel all over your pets and look in their mouth, and that's what you need to do. Thank you so much, Dr. Sue. Look forward to having our own new show really soon. Thanks for jumping into Dr. Shalane Shoes tonight.
Thank you for having me. So much fun.
It was great. Take care, everybody. Kiss your kitties and hug your pooches. We'll talk again next week. Bye for now.